Hey everybody, this is Sean from Low Code Approach. Before we hop in today's episode, I want to let you know that we are collecting everyone's thoughts on what topics we should cover for the upcoming season. To submit them, hopefully you're not driving. If you are, wait until you get somewhere safe, but go to aka.ms/low code topic request. That's all one word, aka.ms/low code topic request. From there, enter what topics you'd like us to cover in the upcoming season. And who knows, maybe we'll be able to get to them and get to the best people at Microsoft to talk to. Anyway, thanks for listening. We're excited to get your thoughts. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of the Low Code Approach. This is actually part two. We had so much fun in our first conversation with Daniel and Karsten that we had to extend it even further. We're continuing our chat about Azure AI Studio and Copilot Studio. So welcome back, Daniel. Welcome back, Karsten.
Thanks for having us. Great to be part of part two.
Yeah, thank you.
Karsten, you've made some great infographics over the years, right, that I have absolutely borrowed from you, right, many times.
Steal my thunder.
Perhaps maybe you might have come up with something that visualizes this. We are a visual type of people, right?
Absolutely.
Do you have something for us?
I can definitely share afterwards with you and happy to do so. So what we did is a kind of a decision tree, which is asking just a couple of questions and then coming up with the fact of in which Copilot experience you're ending up with. And I kept that learning from when I attended, for instance, my very first workshop, which was based on the fact that someone brought in Lego bricks. And as you can imagine, there are the typical classic Lego bricks. Then we do have the technical ones. We do have the Duplo, and we do have all the others. And that's basically something you can relate to, which is this kind of, yeah, we do have many co-pilots, and some of them are actually nicely to be put together. And you can mix and match them up as smooth as possible. And then others like Duplo and, for instance, Lego bricks, that's a little bit more tricky to glue them together, right? This is the kind of visual or this kind of motivation which kicks off my visuals when I'm trying to create these kind of decision trees and come up with simple decisions like, oh, you're ending up in a first-party co-pilot which does this. Because most of the times for customers, it's also about this buy versus build decision. So yes, we do have Microsoft Copilot Studio, and we love everyone to explore the capabilities of this generative AI, or what I sometimes refer to as your AI companion, which might be a better wording. Wink, wink, marketing folks. So on this kind of side of the house, it might be a better fit in terms of when talking to customers and basically onboarding them to that new experience, which is a complete new chapter for all of us. But I mean, we are human beings, and with human beings, we'd like to touch things, we'd like to explore things. And if we don't do it, it becomes a black box. And everything which is a black box, we fear to use, or we are kind of, yeah, shying away from this, right?
So I have so many questions and whatnot, and I'm trying to restrain myself here. You talked about Lego box and whatnot, right? Which is a term for many different types of, like you said, the different brands. Like I equated almost to GoBots versus Transformers, for those of you who get that reference, or a Transformer, which is pre-made and ready to go and whatnot, to the things that Sean and I love, building models, specifically robot models. So here's a question for you. Both of these things actually live on top of Azure. Because Power Platform, we run on top of Azure. So from an ROI perspective and a security and governance perspective, what's better? Which one should I choose? Is it purely a matter of, oh, I want something that's easy for me to use, so I'm going to pick up this Transformer. But I want greater flexibility, and I already have well-established practices because I know that I've been running Azure for years, and I know how to do that. So should I actually use Azure because I already have security and governance and things around that, and I know how to do that?
I can take the first part of it, and I'm happy you're asking this, Ken. And let me go back to my kind of Lego story here. So imagine a world where you would basically throw this kind of Lego box with all the bricks in front of a customer, And then you ask the customer team and say something like, start building. Everyone would look at themselves and say, what is he requesting? What is he referring to? What should we build? Why should we build this? And how should we get started? So back to your point, imagine I would basically hand out the manual for a specific object, right? So in this case, you would follow the Lego brick manual and compose your object of choice. And that is what you would do with Microsoft Copilot Studio. While if you might be an Azure AI specialist and you're a data scientist, or you might be a little bit more like the geekish kid, you know? So you're like, no one forced me to build a police station. No one forced me to build a fire station. So I start immediately playing with it and build my model of choice. And then afterwards, whatever this object would look like, I know we as parents, we are always fine around these kind of things. So we would praise our children for actually doing so. And if they call it a fire station afterwards, it's a fire station. So you can imagine that Azure AI Studio, for instance, is more these kind of, I feel a little bit more like geekish and doing these kind of things from ground up. And I want to do more of the model orchestration. And I want to be my full moderator, for instance, in terms of doing the prompt engineering. While, as Daniel mentioned, Microsoft Copilot Studio is the more managed, prefigured way of doing this, it would be more of following this kind of Lego manual thing where you actually put together these kind of pre-built things for you, which means you're faster, for instance, when you say, hey, this is my HR use case, blah, 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 and I want to basically fulfill on this HR use case. And you would find, oh, there's a pre-trained model for this. Think of it like we shipped, for instance, the other day, AI Builder with all these pre-trained models in terms of, for instance, recognizing invoices. So our customers are no longer forced to train these models in terms of understanding what an invoice is versus what an offer looks like, for instance. So it's a little bit these kind of things between Azure AI Studio, which is an infrastructure as a service offer. You're basically composing infrastructure modules and you're orchestrating infrastructure models. And the other way around is Copilot Studio, which is a SaaS offering. So basically software as a service, which means less maintaining of these kind of things because Microsoft does the hard part for you. But then it's about this kind of, tweaking the last percentages. And Daniel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is how we can best describe it sometimes, right?
Yeah, totally agree. I think that when you look at, for instance, Copilot Studio, it also has a bunch of extendability options that you can have also if you want to use parts from Azure, for instance. So if you want to use for certain parts of your Copilot, you want to use some more advanced features that are more maybe Fusion development kind of scenarios, you can also kind of hook them up into your Copilot. And I think that will become more and more of a thing because not everybody is very well, knowledge about code stuff. So we don't all want to create code stuff. And that's why, of course, when you can use Copilot Studio and you can configure your own topic on an HR subject and you want to use, for instance, a question answer kind of experience, that's something that everybody can easily do and not anything that is Azure related or more pro code. That is something that, for instance, an HR employee can do, for instance. So that's something that can totally make you go one way or the other. But I think that the combination of the both is the most important one.
So would you say that both offerings are easily accessible in your general knowledge?
Yeah, I think that they are easily accessible, but I think that if you look at the enterprises around the world, not everybody has access to Azure, for instance. So you still need to make sure that, for instance, your organization is ready for that. And I think that's also something that Carson has already brought up with the implementation guide, for instance. I think that we really need to look at which enterprises already have implemented, for instance, Copilot Studio or made it available for people to use Azure AI Studio, for instance, and see if people have access to that. But accessibility, if they have access to it, it can be given relatively easily to have the access to that service, of course.
So what I'm hearing from that, Manuel, is that depending on your organization and your friendly neighborhood administrator in there, who you should be giving brownies and coffee and everything to every day, that person more than likely will be controlling the access and whatnot to either one of these particular platforms. And so while Azure, everyone may not have that, ready-made copilots within Copilot Studio, depending on their licensing, oh, I said the L word there, might be more accessible from a pre-made standpoint. However, organizations that are perhaps more mature in their Azure footprint might be equally open to allowing access from the Azure AI Studio for those who may have development studios and whatnot that are more in line with and more comfortable with that. Would that be fairly accurate?
Yeah, correct.
It's all your entry point because, I mean, we talked about this and Ken, you and I maybe have some PTSD from living this life is, you know, many people get into Power, or admins get into the Power Platform because they were the SharePoint administrator. And so when we retired SharePoint workflows or InfoPath, Power Platform was a logical path that we were voluntold to manage this platform. And now we have this new thing called, you know, Copilot, Copilot for M365 especially, that tends to fall more on, again, that SharePoint hybrid Power Platform administrator role. And so looking at what you're doing, if you're looking to extend Copilot, if you're already looking to extend what you're doing on the Power Platform, Copilot Studio makes a lot of sense. If you're coming from the angle of full development, that tends to be a completely different team. And I was actually just talking with a colleague this week. Sometimes we're the ones introducing the two teams and the companies to each other because the Azure side of the house, the development side, isn't always talking to the IT administrator side. And so they are a little bit of different tools depending on your entry point as well.
And it's interesting you're bringing this up, Wendy, because it reminds me so much of a recent conversation I had during the conference I was talking about. So there was a professional developer, and yes, I don't love professional low-code. I call everyone a developer or a creator, to be honest, but he talked himself and introduced himself as being a professional developer. So obviously he was a little bit closer to the Azure side of the house, right? And he came up with, I heard about this Copilot Studio and I heard about Microsoft is now advertising me using this Microsoft Copilot Studio. But don't you think that this is a little bit too low end? It doesn't really feel like being this kind of IDE that I can definitely use to create the next generation of AI solutions. Should I really learn these kind of new path, low code approach, if you will, and run these kind of things? And it was interesting to see because I said, well, first of all, I asked him, what is his kind of access level right now? And obviously he came up with, well, I got my own Azure subscription. I can basically run everything on my own. I'm in full control. And I said, well, you're doing this on your company, right? Yes, he was obviously saying and answering it in an open way. And he said, yes, of course, every single project that I'm working on is for my company. And I'm like, well, you know what? I could challenge your administrator to basically give you your own Azure subscription, because what makes you more responsible, or what makes you a kind of more skilled in terms of data security than, for instance, compared to a normal, what we call someone who is exploring low-code approach side of the house? Because, I mean, I'm doing this for more than 25 years now, and I've seen so many developers stepping into this general pitfalls of they made the same mistakes, right? It's not like a low-code versus a pro-code, and one of them is making less mistakes, right? Everyone can make these kind of mistakes. And I think when it comes up to this governance or security side of the house and then talking to the right teams, I think for us, it's to enrich their knowledge in terms of why they should open up the tools to their employees. And by employees, I mean every employee. Because in the end of the day, like I said, if we keep the tool set in a very tiny little space and ecosystem, the less majority will have access to it, the more will basically consider it as being a black box. And this black box is that kind of thing that I'm going to stay away from because I've never explored it on my own. And it's funny to, again, use an acronym. When we've been grown-ups, our parents basically provided us with a lot of toys to explore them. And on the other side, they could be the governor's team, which could have said, no, this is not for you. This is not the right age, or you don't need to touch these kind of things. So it's that yin and yang ongoing, this kind of balance ongoing, where I think we, as Microsoft, we need to open up the hearts and minds of the administrational teams to say, you can still govern and secure the data security in general and being compliant with your company data, but providing this data source in a safe manner to your creators and then let them explore what is next, what they can build up with this.
So let me jump in here, Carson, because you're spitting out a lot of goodness right here. You said a key word for me, and the thing is, talking about, you know, the team of individuals, even though like it might be one or two folks, it might be one at a customer. I equate those folks to, let's call them the Avengers. They work really well together. They all have a very common goal to protect humanity, in this case, their company, their organization, and so on. The problem is somebody wants to be Thanos and they want to collect all the Infinity Stones and they want to snap their fingers and do whatever the heck it is that they want to do.
Absolutely.
Instead of looking at things from more of a least privilege model and going through and saying, okay, why do you need this? Well, I'm going to give you what you need, but I'm going to give this in the boundaries that are safe for not only for the organization, but for you as well. And I think that the example that you gave of the individual is, you know, I'm throwing out too many comic book, I guess, references, you know, with great power comes great responsibility here, because if that individual has access to their own Azure tenant, which they may need and so on, what else are they actually doing? Who's governing the governor, if you will?
Absolutely. And that is a topic, for instance, which pops up all the time during my customer conversations. And I'm always asking them, for instance, step back in time when, for instance, you have kids and you went with them through that kids' play area. Would you let them start playing? Or would you first go to that basic thing, which sometimes is a very kind of, I would say, it's instruction by instruction, which is written down on these kind of things, where it describes on how to best use X, Y, and that on that kid's playground, not to hurt your kids. So would you explain it step by step to your kid, or would you basically say, you know what? Go on that swing, right? Whatever it will take. And obviously, I will monitor yours and I will take care of yours.
I'll also add to that, though, Karsten, that if you're going to the same playground every day, that playground might slightly vary from time to time, week to week. Climate changes, different times of seasons and things like that, right? So you'll need to check that playground. If you're going to different playgrounds, the rules may not necessarily apply.
Absolutely.
Right.
And this is interesting because sometimes, for instance, if we turn it back into that co-pilot thing and the step that we actually started, Sean asking around, hey, I got my large language model, I got some data and I'm asking maybe stuff to my large language model. And then all of a sudden it comes back with an hopefully reasoning engine response. And you actually recognize that it will tell you something about, hey, I cannot answer it because of, or I can answer it, but only on a limited way and on a limited fashion. And this is because of it brings back, for instance, like I mentioned, these sensitivity labels in the citation. And it says, hey, this is confidential information known by HR folks only, for instance. And it's interesting because I just recently on that hackathon where we typically explore these kind of AI capabilities, I've been asked like, hey, I got a very confidential contract information. Should I upload it and basically make this document learn and train my large language model? I said, well, first of all, how do you know it's confidential? Well, it was shared under confidential. The other thing was, but what makes you thinking that you should upload this to an open space? It's like a WikiLeaks that you're starting. So what the heck are you thinking about these kind of things? Well, I wish that this magical AI immediately takes the responsibility of capturing confidentially. And I said, why do you expect that a machine learning should take up on this? It's a tool. We should train the tool to do the right things, but we should never lose our responsibility in terms of being the humans in the loop.
Karsten, like what you're saying, it just reminds me so much of the Delve story all over.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I keep saying this over and over as an example. Folks want to go and blame AI and co-pilots and whatnot about, oh, I can now see this data. It's being surfaced. This is a problem. If this is confidential, it shouldn't be here. Did you look at the security behind the scenes and see everything else?
Yeah, and that's the same actually at the SharePoint example that we used earlier in this episode. Because when you enter a SharePoint URL and people have access to those files, they will be able to ask questions about it. But when you have misconfigured that SharePoint site and people have more access than they should have, then they will find those answers and they will find a whole bunch of things.
You're talking to me about my day job. I mean, this is the number one thing that we're seeing of customers is we kicked the can on our debt, our IT, you know, infrastructure, or that security debt. And this does not matter if you're using AI or not. This could be found with a SharePoint search. I want to make a quick comment, and then I know we need to start wrapping, and I'll let Sean wrap there. But I would also highlight for our listeners that this conversation we've been having at the end is really important to consider as you're establishing your AI review boards. I know a lot of companies are doing that, but this whole concept of least privileged access, securing your data, make sure you're thinking through some of the tools and guidance as you're crafting your guidance, because that will even help you recommend and say yes more often with confidence as you understand this as well. So definitely an important episode. Karsten, Daniel, you brought some really good points. But Sean, do you want to take us into closing? Any final questions?
Let me inject one quick thing, Sean. Like Wendy, you called it an AI review board when you started talking about security and least privilege. I would challenge our customers to extend that beyond AI. Like, I know our conversation has been about AI, but folks, listen, if we're talking about security and the security of your organization, please consider that least privilege models are and have been, right, the way to go, right, across everything.
Good point.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. Appreciate that. Thank you so much for joining us on this. Daniel, Karsten, Wendy, Ken, you guys rock as always. Thank you again.